We are joined now by Stephen Gowans. Are you there, Mr. Gowans?
I am. Hello, Phil.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. And you've been at it again on the, I should tell people, it's gowans.wordpress.com, what's left. And Stephen, you have taken up this issue of how the Syrian struggle is represented and how the media has can be looking right at something and not see it. The title is Terrorists and a Prime Minister on One Side. Oh, pardon me. I get the full title here. On the Iraq-Syria Border, Terrorists and a Prime Minister on One Side, Rebels and a Brutal Dictator on the other. What border are we talking about here? And it seems to be one story, but when it reaches a border, it turns into another.
Yeah, that's right.
same players.
Yeah, I was just last week, I was leafing through the Wall Street Journal, and I came upon this sentence, which seemed to me a sentence I'd seen before. It said, violence has risen dramatically since the spring when a mostly Sunni and primarily peaceful protest movement against the Shiite-dominated government in Baghdad drew a violent response from security forces. And I thought, wow, I've been seeing things like this about Syria for how long? I mean, but in the Syrian case, it's something like, violence in Syria has risen dramatically since the spring of 2011 when a mostly Sunni and primarily peaceful protest movement against the Alawi-dominated government in Damascus, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me, excuse me, that there is a remarkable parallel between what's happening in the Anbar province of Syria, which borders Syria, mm-hmm. and what had been going on in Syria. And, you know, the Western narrative on Syria is that the government dominated by one religious group use violence to quell a largely peaceful protest movement of another, and that triggered an armed rebellion. So just like mm-hmm. happening in Anbar. And then the government's actions and, you know, the uprising that followed were to understand as a problem, and it's a problem that has to be resolved by removing the president, Bashar al-Assad, you know, who's killing his own people.
Mm-hmm.
As an aside, who also just happens to refuse to play along with Washington's economic and foreign policy agenda. I mean, you look at it that way, well, that's not like Anbar. So you have these two very similar situations existing side by side, but they've been met in completely different ways in the West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only on the part of governments, but also on the part of the news media, because
yes.
the news media has been virtually silent on the Iraqi government cracking down violently on this mostly Sunni and primarily peaceful protest movement. I mean, just like the way it's described in Syria. Yet, as we all know, it's been fevered and voluble in its coverage of the Syrian insurgency and was, you know, right from the very first days.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you do point out that this we're speaking to Stephen Gowans in the articles in gowans.wordpress.com. You say that the Prime Minister Maliki of Iraq is protected, but you also put an asterisk, as I suppose you should always do in that part of the world, behind allies of the Americans. He's protected for now. he can't be. There's no guarantee for him.
No, I mean, here's the, you know, the prime minister who wields violence to crush this peaceful protest movement. But he's still Washington's man in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to get the same treatment that Bashar al-Assad has got. Mm-hmm. But he might. It depends on whether he develops an independent streak. I mean,
yeah.
you can say the same about another leader in Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Was once Washington's man in Baghdad, but became a little too independent
mm-hmm.
and was no longer. And he did get the Assad treatment and worse, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you list three groups of you mentioned, of course, the governments, the different reaction of they have towards what goes on in Iraq and in Syria. You say the governments, the media, but also there are people, and you would identify them as leftists, and this is a discussion. Of course, it's an important contribution that you make, in my opinion, gowans.wordpress.com. You discuss how it is that people who should know better even regard these elements in Syria as being the new October Revolution or something. Is your opinion that is they are as susceptible as the broad public is supposed to be to media domination? That is, they trail the stories as they read them and in their own Western media.
Yeah, I think they're probably more susceptible. You could say, but the bulk of people in the Western world probably don't pay that close attention to foreign affairs. But people on the left generally do pay very close attention. But it's the media that seems to set the agenda for the left. The media decides what's important. The media decides where you're supposed to direct your attention. So you direct your attention to Syria, mm-hmm. to the madman and the brutal dictator in Syria, but you don't really pay much attention to what's going on in Iraq because that's not where the media is focused.
Mm-hmm.
Your attention just follows kind of the media agenda. So mm-hmm. one of the very powerful ways in which the media is powerful is not only in the way in which it presents information, but also in its ability to set the agenda and determine what it is that people look at and consider important and what they're willing to discuss.
Yeah. I once saw Bob Scheer introduced to a crowd in the 1960s by, of all people, Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And the introduction was, you're going to have to listen to Bob because he reads the New York Times from beginning to end every day. He probably wouldn't appreciate my repeating that, but I was standing there and heard it said. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowan.wordpress.com. Something I'd like you to remark on here is there's a really dogmatic attachment in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Toronto Star, Globe Mail. It's the old conspiracy theory. It's almost like they meet in some secret place and all decide that they're going to report Sunni, Alawi, Shia all the time, though many of the people participating in the actual struggles don't use those words. Where does that come from?
No, that's true. There's always the emphasis on the conflict between Sunni and Shiite, Sunni and Alawi. That's how they explain, this conflict between, I shouldn't say it's a conflict, the hostility of Saudi Arabia, for example, to Iran. Mm-hmm. They always attribute to this, Shiite-Sunni enmity that's supposed to exist.
Mm-hmm. Let me give you just a taste of something I saw. It seems very apropos. This gentleman who calls himself the Angry Arab, actually he's a university professor in Fresno, California. Yes, California. He noticed this. The New York Times ran a headline. Now, this is just 2 days ago. The headline reads, "The Iranian authorities executed 16 Sunni insurgents on Saturday, Iranian media reported." Close quotes, New York Times. And the professor says, no, they didn't. That's a lie. The New York Times put in Sunni. There's no mention. He said the media, Iranian media, never called them Sunni.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody is really trying to help us here. that's fomenting, isn't it? I mean, it shows that they've crossed this kind of front that, we're very careful and objective. But that was careful to put in a poisonous piece of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to emphasize, kind of to draw attention away from perhaps more significant cleavages, which would explain the conflict, more significant than religious or sectarian cleavages.
Mm-hmm. Now, you point out in your article that... if we look at it closely, they've done this with others, and you give them the example of the President, I guess he was a president, Meles Zenawi. Could you talk about that and how they treated Meles Zenawi of Ethiopia and, in contrast, President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe?
Yeah, Meles Zenawi, this guy is unbelievable. If anyone wants to do some research into him, they find out that Meles Zenawi was kind of a monster, but he's the monster that that Robert Mugabe is made out to be by the Western government news media, but isn't. But if you want to find the person who is really the way this monster is depicted, go look at Meles Zenawi.
Yeah, he never had any close elections, did he?
This guy was unbelievable. And what was also just incredible was he died last year. And when he died, the hosannas that came from the Western press in the West were embarrassing. This guy escaped sanction and he escaped demonization from the West. And he was lionized when he died. And he was all the things that Robert Mugabe was supposed to be and isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But he did the West bidding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the West.
Including invading Somalia.
Yes. Needed someone to invade Somalia, so they got him to do it. And he was happy to do it for them.
Yeah. I was very glad you attached to your article a quote from President Assad, quote, "Syria is an independent state working for the interests of its people rather than making the Syrian people work for the interests of the West." It galls me continually that quotes of this kind are not found in our media. I mean, I wouldn't mind if people wanted to take it up and argue it, but we don't find the quote to begin with to even know he said it.
Well, no, that's right, because then that would explain too much, wouldn't it? And we should also mention that Meles Zenawi, if he was to say anything similar in his private moments, it would be something like, "Ethiopia is not an independent state."
Yeah. We do work for the West, and it's rather poor wages compared to what we probably deserve.
But, I mean, Mugabe would say exactly the same thing. I mean, Zimbabwe is an independent state working for the interests of its people and not making Zimbabweans work for the interests of the West.
Indeed, what he went through, and it's still going through, all kinds of hell because he wants control over Zimbabwe's diamonds to be that of Zimbabweans.
Yes.
And that's almost a crime, a blood crime or something.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the leader's attitude toward U.S. free enterprise and U.S. profit-making and the profit-making of Western corporations, I mean, all of that explains whether you're going to be demonized or you're going to be treated as a hero. And, mm-hmm. That's the only way in which you can explain why it is that Robert Mugabe is a monster, but Meles Zenawi is not.
Mm-hmm.
Or, Assad is a monster, but the prime minister of Iraq is not.
And, of course, all the monarchs of the Gulf are swell fellows. It takes us to another second article, which is available at gowans.wordpress.com. Also this month, Friends of Syria or Friends of Imperialism. And there's 11 countries who are calling for a new government in Syria. And you break it down rather nicely. There are five of them are monarchies. Can you tell us who are these 11 and how did they get together? Why do they think Assad has to go? What is it that he's lacking that they've got?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this Friends of Syria group, to use street parlance, I mean, they're a big joke. And the fact that anyone takes them seriously is just amazing. Because, I mean, here are these 11 countries who favor a democratic transition in Damascus. And they say that the president of Syria has no role in Syria, has to, which is, rather strange for a democracy-promoting group, that they should dictate to Syrians who it is who can't be president of their country, rather than democratically leaving the question up to Syrians themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, five of them do not support democracy in their own countries, as you said. I mean, you get Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates. I mean, these are monarchies and emirates. They're never going to be democracies. They're not going to be a democratic transition there. And then one of them, Egypt, that's a military dictatorship. And then you have the remainder are these formal democracies. So we have the United States, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Turkey. They're not promoting democratic transition within the territories of their coalition partners. I mean, they're limiting their attentions and their intervention to Syria alone. So why Syria and not Saudi Arabia, where women can't drive?
Mm-hmm.
And they're never going to be elections.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it comes back to, well, what's the attitude of these countries to U.S. free enterprise?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, I mean, they have the right attitude to U.S. free enterprise, and Syria doesn't. I mean, one of the things that often isn't pointed out about Syria is that the State Department has complained bitterly about Syria's remaining commitment to socialism. And the Wall Street Journal and you know, some of the right-wing or business-oriented foundations in the United States complain that Assad hasn't integrated the Syrian economy into the wider world economy, meaning he still has state-owned enterprises. He's still not embracing neoliberalism. He's still committed to these socialist values.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's why they pay attention to Syria, and that's why they ignore these other countries that are not even democracies.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we're speaking to Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, what's left. And this theme of wanting to impose, in your writing over the years, you pointed out that when they say human rights, which is, of course, the battering ram they've been using. We're trying to straighten the world up and make sure right is freedom is spread across the world. Free enterprise is a crucial element of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
They explicitly say you're not a free country unless it's a capitalist country.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your attitude to free enterprise explains the way in which the U.S. is going to treat you. Unless you're large enough,
in other words, corporations are people, and they're trying to spread the freedom to all the people of the world.
Sure, the right
who are known as corporations often, sometimes.
Yeah, the right to exploit labor, the right to own private productive property. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I said the friends of Syria are a joke, I mean, it's a big joke because I mean you have six former colonial powers.
Mm-hmm.
All of those formal democracies, they're all former colonial powers, didn't give, you know, they didn't care one whit about democracy when they held the bulk of humanity in colonial bondage. And so you have these six colonial powers in a coalition with five tyrannies telling Syrians who they can't have as president, supporting these exiles who are waiting in the wings, you know, to come onto the Syrian stage as everyone knows they're going to be Washington's puppet. I mean, that's hardly the picture of democracy promoters.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, we noticed that when they had this clash, the head-to-head exchange was quite dramatic between President Putin and Obama. The obtuseness of the Obama side or the Western side was so evident. I mean, the use of the word exceptional. I mean, the United States is exceptional. And then, as you point out, telling a president that he has to have democracy and proof of it would be that he leaves and isn't allowed to run, they kind of make it easy for Putin and hit home runs every time he swings.
Well, that's
I mean, he must scratch his head at how dumb they are when they do this. Because, I mean, he reminds me of perhaps a comedian somewhere, looks at the audience and says, did he just hear what he just said? Or is he dreaming?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so obviously, the double standards are so obvious. The only way in which anyone can accept them without comment is if you, somehow you've obscured the double standards, which the press and the media do doing.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. Stephen, I wonder if I could take you to one point I didn't alert you to, wanted to ask you about, but we on this program, we're just talking about this the issue of Roma in Europe and the flash of old style pogroms and racism we're seeing. Are you following that at all? Do you think maybe it's a symptom of something?
well, it has happened before, hasn't it? And it has happened at a time when there were certainly economic difficulties within Europe.
Mm-hmm.
There's straitened circumstances, and certainly the times in Europe are very difficult for many, many people, with large unemployment, especially among youth. So what happens when you have these economic turmoil and people perhaps start looking to alternative explanations for their condition and looking for a solution to their problems? And when that happens, if you're in ruling circles and you want to preserve the system as it is, of course you have to divert people's attentions away from the real problem and have them start focusing on pseudo-problems that they can blame all of their troubles on, like
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, minority groups who are stealing our jobs, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so striking. I was shocked by it, actually. I mean, it shouldn't be shocked, but the that suddenly we're hearing about it's a Roma couldn't be blonde. I mean, a blonde is obviously one of us or something. Or that the Roma are not Europeans, and yet part of our lore, our culture, is gypsies. A gypsy is a magic word in our culture.
Uh-huh. No, yeah, that's right.
It's rather striking.
But speaking of the Roma, though, not too many weeks ago, I was in Paris, and I was in the Marais district, and I was astonished to discover, after returning, to read in the New York Times stories about how people are harassed by Roma in the Marais district.
Harassed.
And I was there. I thought, that's funny. Maybe I wasn't in the right places, because it certainly didn't happen to me. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, apropos, I just was, before we had you on, I read this headline. Are the Roma primitive or just poor? And that is the New York Times.
Mm.
And a professor in California, of previously cited, said, is the New York Times stupid or racist or both? By the way, I'm really glad you told us about being in Paris, and we like having a living witness to these things. You're writing great columns, gowans.wordpress.com, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yep, thank you very much.
Stephen Gowans, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. But to Stephen Gowans, and that is a great website, gowans.wordpress.com. What's left? Not enough, we are finding. Again, I told you earlier, I guess I have the Roma on my mind today, but The Guardian, I just go to their site. There's an article there by Philip Borev, titled "I Was a Pale Roma Baby." It's always been a family joke that I was stolen. Then he says, "Now it's not so funny anymore." When I see these stories, and he tells a lot about the history of the Roma along with his own family story. There's a second piece by a woman writing in The Guardian. Of course, the other nice thing is that you go on the net, you find these things put together for you to make it help clear. And she writes, her name is Louise Doherty, and she makes the following point about the family. I was telling before, the Roma are famous for their affection for their children, and She says the racist reporting of the Greek case is all the more bitter to those familiar with Roma history. Renowned expert, and it's time to look towards the experts, Professor Thomas Acton, says, I know of no documented case of Roma gypsy travelers stealing non-gypsy children anywhere. Far from Romani abducting white children, the truth has been the other way around. Hundreds of Yenish Roma boys and girls, were forcibly taken by the authorities in Switzerland from 1926 to 1972. The children were placed in orphanages or homes for people with learning difficulties, and their families denied all contact with them. So you want to find the dirty, miserable, ignorant people, and most of them are running governments in Europe, apparently. Criminal gangs that exploit children exist in any society, every society, particularly poor ones. But the persistent linking of child abduction with Roma ethnicity per se is nothing more than the perpetuation of a racist medieval myth. We don't yet know the truth of the adoption of Maria by the community in which she was found, and the myth should be consigned to the historical dustbin. Again, Guardian is doing the best job that I can see so far of covering this. You've been listening to the Taylor Report. We're really happy, again, to tell you that the CIUT fundraising was great fun, great success, particularly the Taylor Report. We're happy at the support we've gotten. Of course, we're going to keep on doing the same old thing, which I guess seems to be what people want us to do. For Phil Conlon, and this is Phil Taylor, write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. Check us out, taylor-report.com. Remember that you can find Michael Mandel at interview on September the 2nd of this year, 2013. And again, we're very sorry at the loss of such a wonderful man. So this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report saying see you next week.
Did you know you can listen to CIUT?